We often say that, you know, we live in the world, but we don't have to follow the ways of the world. I mean, sometimes I would say, you know, as Dharma students, we live in the world, but we don't follow the ways of the world. But a lot of us, of course, and we all do to some extent, follow the ways of the world. You know, as students, Dharma students, one of the options that we have is, you know, and again, these aren't necessarily black and white options, but one of the options that we have is that we can use, if I want to use the word, use our practice, our meditation, as a way of having less stress when we're in the world. So in other words, we follow the ways of the world and we use the meditation to have less stress as we are engaged in that process of following the ways of the world. That's one way to use the practice or to apply what we've learned. And the other is not to follow the ways of the world and to follow a different path, to follow a different path. Now that's a lot harder. That's a lot harder because, you know, the ways of the world are the ways of the world. That's what everyone's doing. And it's hard to go against the stream of the world. But this is something we can do. And the path offers us a way to do that. It offers a path by which we can do that. And of course, we do that because it's a path of greater happiness. Now, of course, we have to come to see that for ourselves. So it's a process of understanding that abandoning the ways of the world and following a different path is a way to a greater happiness. And the more, of course, we understand that, then the more inclined we are to abandon the ways of the world. So there's different ways of understanding what we're talking about when we talk about the ways of the world, going along with the ways of the world, going away along with the current. You know, essentially what it means is that we live in a way that is an expression of emulating what others are doing. So we kind of go along with what everybody else is doing. So everybody gets a smartphone, we get a smartphone. So when we follow the ways of the world, so what is everyone doing? So of course this is something that you have to see for yourself. And when we talk about what we're doing when we're following the ways of the world, really what we're looking at is what we're doing in the service of finding happiness. We all want to be happy. You know, as human beings, all human beings want to be happy. That's our, you know, that's our goal, is to be happy. But there's different ways of going about finding happiness and different kinds of happiness. So we often talk about the happiness of the world and the happiness of the path. And we often talk about the happiness of the world being the happiness that we find in sense pleasures, in gain, in status, and in praise. So looking for happiness in sense pleasures is a way of finding happiness that most people ascribe to. And of course, there's all the different kinds of sense pleasures, and we look for happiness in them. You know, our culture, we live in a very technological culture, technological age. So the technology is geared in large part to providing us with different forms of sense pleasure. Because that's what the economy of the world is about. You know, if we want to make money and be successful in that way, we use whatever means we have. The most advanced means that we have now are the means of technology to provide services, to provide experience that will offer the kind of happiness that most people are looking for. So this technological age in large part is an age in which we have all these different forms of technology that we can partake in the service of having sense pleasure. You know, the phones are a big one, right? You know, the phones are a big one. I mean, that's just one example of the ways of the world in which people look for happiness in the phone. So, you know, these are things that we're asked to look at, you know, to look at to what extent do we look for happiness in the phone and what kind of happiness that is. You know, I was out this morning and beautiful morning and just kind of walking through the East Village and, you know, looking into some of the restaurants and people sitting at their tables and having their post New Year's Eve repast and sitting opposite each other in these lovely places, the food on the table and on the phone. Two people, obviously in love, sitting across from each other on the phone. So, you know, we don't suggest that you abandon the phone, but what we do suggest is that you look at what your relationship to it is, you question whether or not it's bringing you the kind of happiness that will really bring you fulfillment in this life. And what we ask you to do is to see that you have a choice. You know, you have a choice. Because most of us don't think we have a choice. We just have to have the phone and go along with the ways of the world. But that's not really true. You don't have to have the phone. People are probably bristling, yes, I do. Well, it's a choice. It's a choice. You don't have to have it. You're making a choice. So that's what we ask you to see, is that you have a choice. Most people think, well, no, I don't have it. You have a choice. You have a choice. And that's what, you know, choosing between the ways of the world and the path of the Dharma is asking us to understand, is that we have a choice in terms of the ways that we live. We look for happiness in gain, in money, accumulating money. The idea being the more money that I have, the more happiness that I'll have. Or if I have a certain amount of money, I'll be happy. And why would people make so much effort to make money? Because they think that's going to lead them to happiness. Now, of course, all the research has shown that there's no correlation between the amount of money that you have once you have basic subsistence and happiness. But we just go along with that idea. I mean, I'm not one of these kind of meditation teachers that sort of lived in a glass bubble. I mean, I worked in corporate America for over 20 years, you know? I followed the ways of the world. I thought making money would be the way that I would find happiness. So we look for happiness in money, the material things that money can buy. You know, just watch the mind, see what's happening when you're doing online shopping, right? The idea is like, this is going to bring me happiness. You know, it's gain, right? It's not even so much the stuff, it's getting the stuff, right? It's buying the stuff, and then the stuff comes. So again, you know, just looking at and seeing, how am I looking for happiness? Where am I looking for happiness? In status. You know, we look for happiness and status in being acknowledged. In being acknowledged. We look for happiness in praise and being praised. I've often talked about how, you know, when I wrote my last book on skillful qualities, after the book was published, I could see how much I wanted acknowledgement for it. And of course I wanted acknowledgement because I believed that that would be something that would bring me happiness. You know, I was sending out, we had a course this fall, and I sent out, I put together a bibliography for the course, and was doing it actually today, and you know, had the books, and then you know, sort of went to Amazon and got the links so people could buy the books if they wanted to. And you know, I was looking at one of the books and getting the link, and you know, and I kind of scrolled down, and there was that line, you know, like other books that people have read who've read this book, and there was a book there by this guy I know, you know, that he came out with this book about a year ago, and I'm like, fuck. And then I look, 73 reviews. 73. You know, then of course what did I do? I went immediately to my page. 9 reviews. You know. But that's what we believe, you know. Like, I'd be happy if I had the 73 reviews and my book was one of the books that others have read that have read this book. Like, half the people who did the reviews are in the room tonight. Another way to think about, and the Buddha talked about this, about the world and what the world is the world is the experience of the senses, the 6 senses, the 5 senses that we typically talk about, and the sense of the mind. So we make our world, you know, we take in experience at the senses as a way of making our world in an effort to find happiness. Technology is really good for that. I mean, the phone is perfect because it really, you know, there's the visual sense, you know, and there's the, you know, the sense of hearing, you know, and then there's the ideas, you know, the mental sense. You know, and there's a lot of that through technology, as we all know, you know, the proliferation of ideas, of thinking, of words through social media, you know, information resources. So it's the inundation of the senses through media, through technology, that we, you know, sometimes we use the term feeding. It's the way that we're feeding in an effort to find happiness. I mean, when we feed on the sense of the mind, as a way of making our world, a lot of what we're doing in terms of thinking is engendering our narratives, right? I mean, our world really is our thought worlds. And this is what the Buddha said, we live in these thought worlds. And they're not real. They're not real. They're worlds that we make up, but this is the world that we live in. And this is where we look for happiness. In being a participant in these worlds. So we have these worlds, these thought worlds, you know, I am this, the world is this way, this is what I do, this is what the world does, this is my experience of life, this is how I am in the world, this is what I need to do to be happy. You know, these are all narratives. You know, we're cultivating these narratives in an effort to try to find happiness, but they're not real. They're just stories that we're making up. And of course, there's the, you know, the idea of self, this idea that we have of who we are. And if I can develop this idea of self to the point where, you know, who I am in my mind is something that I find worthy of eliciting within me feelings of happiness. So, you know, this is the way that we live. And of course, what we again are asked to do is to see that and to question that. What the teachings would say is that there's great suffering in living that way and in following the ways of the world. We read that we chanted that sutta tonight on the Dhamma summaries. You know, the world is swept away. The world can't bring a lasting happiness. These things of the world can't bring a lasting happiness. These ideas that we have about ourselves and our lives can't bring a lasting happiness. It's actually a very precarious happiness. And it's actually a happiness that is really fraught with pain. The world is insufficient. You know, it doesn't satisfy, doesn't bring true happiness. Sense pleasure, status, praise, gain, material things, doesn't bring true happiness. It's insufficient. We keep grasping after it. We keep grasping after it. We can never have enough. We get some, we need more. We engender a narrative about our lives, and we have to keep engendering a narrative and adding to the narrative and keep developing that story. And we see this, you know, as we get older and certainly at the end of our lives, all these things and the ways that we've lived and all the ways that we've tried to find happiness haven't brought us any happiness. Now, I always say, perhaps somewhat kiddingly, you know, chances are you're not going to look back at the end of your life, you know, as you're in your last few minutes, and you're not going to recall that smartphone you bought, you know, in 2017. Wow, this was a good life. I had that really great iPhone, whatever it is, right? So our practice gives us a way, if we so choose, to step back from the world. You know, to step back from the clamor of the world. You know, the world, it's very chaotic, and there's, you know, the word I like is clamor. It's very noisy, you know. And what we see in the media is very noisy. What we see in the world, from the people who are following the ways of the world, there's lots of commotion, there's lots of clamor. It's hard to see that until we step back from it a little bit, right? You know, put the cell phone to the side for one day. You know, the problem is you have to go through some withdrawal, perhaps. That's why these things are good not to do on your own, or turn, you know, the media off for a day and see what that's like. And we did that in this group this year. We had a week where we kind of supported each other, and we had 2-day-long retreats, and we had classes every day, and people turned off the media for a week. You know, and to a person, it was like, this was so much more peaceful, this was so much more easeful. There was so much more stillness, there was so much more happiness. It's a happiness of a different kind, right? It's the happiness of the heart. So, in this practice, we try to step back from the world. So one of the things that we can do is to come to a class like this. You know, we design this group or these classes, you know, in large part so there's a place of silence, a refuge, you know, amidst New York City. You know, when I started New York Insight, you know, this was sort of my idea, you know, that in the noise and clamor and the commotion of the city, there could be a quiet space. You put a lot of effort into finding spaces that were quiet and creating quiet environments in those spaces. People said, you can't do that in New York. Famous meditation teachers, probably the ones that have this 83 reviews. Said, you can't do that in New York. Well, I said, no, I think we can do that. What I said was, well, this is where I live. You know, if I'm gonna be happy, I need to find a place of silence, a place of stillness. So we offer a place of stillness. You can come here on Sunday night for 90 minutes. You can sit and meditate for a half hour and find a place of stillness. You can come to a day-long retreat. We do 1-day-long retreat. And I always look forward to those days, you know, just as a day of, you know, taking myself out of the world. And for, you know, from 10 in the morning till 5 at night, just to be in a place of silence. And this is our practice. It's very hard for people. I mean, we usually have, what, 15 people at those retreats? Pretty much the same 15 people every month. most people don't want to give up the ways of the world. Most people want to look for happiness in the ways of the world. The people who come every month, those 15, kind of know that there's a happiness there that is really a true happiness. To find that silence and that stillness. So this is what we try to do. And of course, in a class, you can hear the Dharma, which, you know, sort of whether or not you like the teacher, it's still better than what's on the news programs. And you can collaborate with wise beings who, you know, in here are asked to follow precepts and ethical guidelines. So we offer a space like this, and really what we're offering here is a refuge where you can take a step back in the world, from the world, put the world to the side. Now, ultimately, we need to take a step back from the clamor within ourselves, the clamor at our senses, the clamor in the mind, the noise in the mind, the thinking, the narratives, right? And that's why we meditate, to find a silence within through breath meditation. So we learn to develop what the Thais like to call a home for the mind, a good place to put the mind. Yeah, so instead of the mind being, you know, caught up in the things of the world or the things of our lives or our narratives, we put the mind on the breath. We put the mind inside, in the body, in a place of ease, a place of stillness, a place of peace. You know, so this is the ultimate refuge and the true refuge. You know, we can come to classes like this, but we're not monks, we're not nuns. So, you know, we're not living at that monastery. We are going back to the world even when we go to the monastery. You know, this is why years ago, I realized that, you know, because when I learned meditation within the tradition of insight meditation, it was mostly based on retreats. So you go to a retreat for a week or 9 days, and during that time, you know, you find some inner silence, and then you go back to your life, and everybody would always say this, I didn't have the skills to find an inner silence back there in the world. You know, I needed that space. Well, I lived in the world. I wasn't going to go to retreat all the time, and I wasn't a monk, so how could I develop that inner silence within? Well, I realized my meditation practice wasn't strong enough. I wasn't doing what the Buddha said in order to be able to have a reliable refuge within. So that's when I started working with my teacher and learned how to develop the Buddha's concentration so that I had a reliable refuge within that I could go to at any time. This is what our practice offers us. We're developing a skill so that we have a refuge within. And this is kind of one of the things that I didn't understand necessarily when Tanjev spoke to me that time, and I came to understand it. You know, it's sort of like this idea of having a refuge is not a concept. You know, it's not a concept. I mean, this class or the, you know, it's not a concept. The breath is not a concept. The breath is an actual refuge, a place where you can put your mind and keep your mind, and it's a place of ease and well-being, of silence, of stillness, and peace. If you develop that. I mean, that has to be developed. But this is what the practice offers us, is skills by which we can develop this inner refuge, a reliable inner refuge, so that when the world is in chaos and when there's clamor in the world, I think there has been or there is and there always will be, or when there's clamor and chaos in our minds, we have a place where we can go. You know, and we develop this inner refuge and strengthen it and strengthen it and strengthen it so that it's always available to us, not only when we're meditating, but when we're doing whatever it is we're doing. That we always have a refuge, a place where we can go that's still, that's silent, that's peaceful. It's not a concept, it's a real thing. I mean, I was, you know, and of course I've, you know, understanding is always developing. You know, over the last year or so, when my mom died, you know, two of my best friends died, and that, you know, it was just the, you know, that's the clamor of sickness, aging, and death, and the, you know, and the turmoil of that, you know, that's all just part of life, because life in and of itself, you know, is swept away. The world is swept away, the senses are swept away, the body is swept away, the mind is swept away, all the things that are dear and appealing to us are swept away. You know, what isn't? What can we rely on? You know, and it was just so, it was such a powerful experience to me to see that, you know, within this chaos, you know, in my mind and in my life, that I could go to a place that was peaceful, that was still, that was silent, and I could go there whenever I wanted to. And it wasn't about being indifferent to what was happening in the world, but it was a place where I could go for refuge, to rest the mind, to keep the mind, a good home for the mind. But of course, our practice isn't just that. It's not just the silence. It's not just the silence. Because out of the silence is how we make our lives. We make our lives out of the silence. You know, the world is very noisy and everybody's saying, do this, do this, do this. Get this phone, do this. This is what you have to do. This is your reviews, you know. It's very noisy out there. You come into the silence and the stillness and put all that to the side, and in the silence we can make our lives, because that's what we're asked to do. It's out of the silence that we make our way, we create our way. The silence gives us room. Sometimes we call it emptiness. You know, it's just like when we're there, you know, the Buddha said this very clearly, when you're with the breath in that way, and when you're in that place of silence, there is no self. There's no, you know, when you really get to that place, it's not I'm breathing or my breath, it's just breathing. There's just breath. There's no narrative. It's just breathing. It's just breath. It's just stillness. This is the place of freedom. We're free from our narratives, we're free from the narratives and the stories of the world, and we can make our way, we can create our way in the world. So instead of following the ways of the world, instead of following our narratives, we make our way. We make our way. We create our way. You know, when we say, you know, don't follow the ways of the world, it doesn't mean that we're retreating from life. It means that we're making a life for ourselves. We're creating a life for ourselves. So in the silence, there's freedom. There's the freedom to create. And it's like Suzuki Roshi, you know, used to say, you know, it's like in the beginner's mind, you know, there's endless possibilities. You know, it's that mind that's filled up like a cup, that there's no room. You know, so the meditation is like we're emptying the cup. You know, and in that space we make our way. We create our lives. Practice is inherently creative. I always liked, you know, what one of my spiritual gurus, Joe Strummer, used to say. You know, the future is unwritten. You know, this is the truth. You know, this is the truth. The future is unwritten. The future is unwritten. Nobody knows what's going to happen tomorrow or the next day. The future is unwritten. The future doesn't say, you've got to have that new cell phone. You know, the future is unwritten. You're not condemned to live a certain life. You're not required to live in a certain way. You can if you want to, but you're not required to. I mean, this is the truth of the way things are. We don't really believe that. We think, well, this is who I am, and this is the way that I have to live, and this is the way that I'm going to live. But it's not true. And you understand that in the silence. I never understood that. You know, when you're caught up in the ways of the world, it's like being caught in a river. You know, you get up on the shore and you say, oh, there's that one river. I don't have to jump in that river. I can go, you know, find another way. But when you're in the river, it's hard to know that there's something else. You come into the silence and you say, you know what, I don't have to go back into that river. I don't have to do that. I'm free. I'm free. This is a path of freedom. Meditation is about taking our freedom back, taking our lives back, and making our lives, creating our lives. I mean, that's what the path offers. You know, sometimes we say, well, you can have not stress, you can just have less stress, or you can alleviate suffering. You know, and if you really want, you know, the path offers freedom. The path offers a way for you to create your life. Now, of course, that's not easy, right? You know, the Buddha said it's much easier to go along with the herd. It's much easier to go along with everybody else. The hard part, of course, is that you have to create the silence. And really, if you just create the silence, then you begin to understand. You know, it's like a person comes in here, you know, and they're taking a breath meditation course, you know, and they have all these ideas about what breath meditation is. You know, they're not going to learn anything from what I have to say. Beginner comes in, it's like they're like a sponge. They'll learn new things. Well, that's how we need to be. We need to have that kind of beginner's mind so that we can make our lives. I mean, this is what the path offers. The path offers a way to silence, to stillness, and out of that silence and stillness, we make our lives. So the future is unwritten. This year doesn't have to be like last year. Doesn't have to be like last year. You could do something different this year. You could do something different. Now, part of what you need to do if you're going to do something different is you got to stop doing what you're doing. You know, come into a place of silence and see what in the silence, see what other ways of living are available to you. This year doesn't have to be like last year. Every day is open to create something new. Every moment is open. And one of the things we were talking about this in one of the classes not too long ago, and you know, one of the things that I said to people was, you know, start with a moment or start tonight. Go home tonight, I think I said, and you can check your homework pages, which I'm sure at the end of the year you'll want to go over and review and scour through and take out the nuggets, you know. But I think the activity was go do something different when you go home tonight. You know, you could do something different. You don't. When you go home tonight, you don't have to do what you always do when you go home. Now, you may go home and maybe it'll be, you know, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, and maybe you go to bed at 12. 2 hours of doing something different might be too much to handle. So you could probably do 5 minutes of something different. 5 minutes of doing something that you never, ever do. You've never even done before, maybe. I mean, I think one of the things I suggested was dancing. I don't think people looked at me like I was crazy. Why not? Nothing wrong with dancing. You could sing. You could sing. Create something. Create something. Everybody here can create something. Everybody here can make some art out of their lives. You don't need to be the next great abstract expressionist. You can find your own way of making art. Everybody here can do that. Everybody here can do that. You just find your own way. Rumi said, "Today, like every other day, we wake up empty and frightened. Don't open the door to the study and begin reading. Yeah, that's just old knowledge. Take down a musical instrument. Let the beauty we love be what we do. There are hundreds of ways to kneel and kiss the ground. You find a way to kneel and kiss the ground tonight, tomorrow." I mean, that's what this practice is about. You know, and you know, it's important for me to say that because I think we maybe shortchange it as Dharma teachers. You can have a great life. You can have a joyful life. You can create a beautiful life for yourself, better than that mundane, humdrum rut of a life that most people live. You don't have to live that way. But you have to develop the skills. It's like I kind of always knew that, but I didn't have the skills. And little by slowly, You know, as I was more and more in the silence, I began to see clearly. And it's like, you don't have to live the way that you're living. You could live a different way. There's many other ways that you could live. So we don't have to follow the same ruts. You don't have to follow the ways of the world. You can make your own life. You can create your own life. I mean, you've done it before. You have that potential. That's what a child does, right? Every day is brand new. Every day is something new. Those of you who have kids know that, right? You think you lost that? You didn't lose it. I mean, you stopped doing it, but you still have the potential for that. You still have the potential for that. So this is where the meaning is in life and in this path, in making your way, in creating your life. This is where happiness is. Happiness for us and happiness for all beings.